cliffcentral.com.
All right. Let's get cracking. There's so much to do today. Got Ben with us, and Pop-Ups will be joining us in a short while. We love Pop-Ups, and there's a guy who's going to make you feel better about the day, even if you're having a shit start to it. Lots of things to talk about, lots of things happening in the world, and it is Friday, so that's a good reason to wake up. Going, yes, absolutely. We were talking just earlier about Tom Jones, you know, because he comes up from time to time. And there's Tom Jones, a Welshman, who actually went ahead and made a success of himself. If that isn't an inspiring story, I don't know what is.
I just feel like you should be bringing pictures up of Tom Jones, because he was an absolute monument of a man. He was orange before it was fashionable to be orange. And in a town where everyone was black.
That's right.
Not because they were black. Yeah, I mean, he really was quite something, Gareth.
Yes, no, let's find a good picture of Tom Jones. In fact, I can find you. Do you want a recent picture, or do you want one from the heyday?
No, the heyday. No one likes old people.
Smelly, sweaty old people. All right.
Tom Jones sang Thunderball, didn't he? James Bond song.
Did he?
Yeah.
At the height of his powers.
He did everything. At the height of his powers. Not only was he lashing our listeners' moms, he was singing Bond theme tunes.
He really was lashing our listeners' moms. In fact, I just got an email from someone who says that they're absolutely sure that they're Tom Jones's child. So you know what? We may have hit a
humbling
nerve.
Humbling them.
He was humbling
them backstage.
Yes. So Tom Jones, at the height of his powers, this is him in an orange jumpsuit on a television show singing Delilah. Here he is, looking great. There's Tom Jones. Let me just see if I can put him full screen for you. Where is? How do I get this on there? They've changed the format of this damn thing, so I'm not even sure how to do this properly. But you can see him in the background.
He's
there.
He's currently behind us.
Yeah, sorry about that. I don't know how to make
him. Which is a shame because he was a front man.
He really was. What a guy.
I think he was also a rear man as well. I reckon he did everything.
Well, it was the 70s. Nobody's judging. Here he is. Look at him. How great is that? And look at the dancing girls behind him, blissfully unaware that he was going to be putting his pork sword to them straight after the show. You know?
No, they knew. They knew. Look at that one. That one's looking straight at his privates. There we go. Still got it.
Now, that's not that long ago, but here is a more recent picture of Tom Jones. I know you don't like old people, Ben. In fact, you said nobody likes old people, but here he is. Still got it. You know, look at that hair. Look at that hair. That hair is like a Brillo patch that you would use to scour pots. And I guarantee you it's twice as strong.
But he's just such a unique guy. Like, I would love to know, like, his family tree or family thicket must be quite something.
It's a family thicket. You better believe it. You know, the Welsh, they're really, you know, it was mostly, the Welsh were mostly made out of anger and mountains. And they've got a language where there's far too many consonants and not enough vowels. And you actually nobody speaks like that unless they've been under huge duress for hundreds of years. No one.
And why are they so obsessed with elves?
And singing. They love singing. They have choirs. There's a choir for everything. Funeral choirs, wedding choirs. Got a promotion at work choir. There's a choir. They just pitch up. I mean, you're busy gardening and you plant a bluebell, and then somebody comes out with a choir from behind the bushes and they start singing. You got a great bush of bluebells. And then they, of course, if Tom Jones is in the choir, he tries to mount you. But then that's a whole separate story. Quite an incredible guy. He really is quite something. And he's still alive, right? I mean, he's healthy. He's like a bull. It's impossible to take him down.
He is still alive. And someone said he looks like a white Morgan Freeman.
Yes. True. That's a very good description. Yeah, Corona's boring. Let's give credit where it's due. Apparently, Tom taught Elvis to wear a toilet inner roll in his groin so he would look big. Tom didn't have
Smart.
To. But Tom didn't have to do that. I guarantee he has a great big todger.
Tom had one of those minor cocks. You know, those just...
You slap it on the table and the table cracks in half.
Slap it down like he's been baguette shopping at a heavy bakery.
Hey, we haven't spoken about Princess Charlene for a while, and I know the connection is tenuous, but there's a Tom Jones Street in Benoni, and I thought suddenly of Princess Charlene. You see how my mind works? I mean, let's not forget, to get a street named after you in Benoni, so far away from Wales, is quite an achievement too. So if that doesn't prove Tom is a celebrity, I don't know what does. But, you know, Princess Charlene was born in Benoni, of course, as well. Now, we haven't spoken about her, but she's still seemingly very, very unhappy in her marriage. She only gets let out for public occasions, suffering some kind of a breakdown. Do you think that what she needs is to swim more? Because she was quite happy when she was swimming. I always find, like, the simplest solutions are often the best. Give her a swimming pool.
Oh, definitely. But I always find it quite funny that, like, the Monaco Grand Prix at the end, because it's a very prestigious race to win. Yes. It's very boring to watch. But sure, as a driver, you want to win that. And you'll see Prince Albert-y person. He's yes, generally always got the kids around him, or there's girls around him. And then she stands there like she's literally being paraded out. It's like their wife, me, famous, yes, great person.
Right.
But she's like always the other side of the stage. I just think she needs to listen to some Tom Jones music, get the friends around,
have a swim.
Everything is happy with Tom Jones. His music is just is phenomenal.
I have a feeling that you're going to be listening to a lot of that this weekend. Have you got any plans for the weekend, Ben? Anything fun happening? You got to have something to look forward to in the weekend. Nothing.
I know you got to have something. You got to have something to look forward to in your life. You're right, but this weekend looks pretty fucking dire. No, it really is. I'm being honest here. This is my first week back at gym, so I'm infinitely happier because of that. So
that's good. Well, you don't sound like it. All you've done all morning is complain, but okay.
I have. But I complain about, like, the bigger things here, because actually deep down, I am a humanitarian, which I've come to realize.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've got a really big golf game coming up on the 21st, so I'm going to hit some balls. It's just like I'm in a very trying work cycle at the moment where I have to do quite a lot of things. But I'm going away on the 22nd. I'm going to go into a game park and just read a book. I'm going to go, because, like, my idea of fun is a Wilbur Smith book, steak on the grill, and staring into horizons and looking at animals, just be animals.
That's a very attractive proposition. We had Flaxon on Wednesday. He's also going into the bush for a week next week, I think. And he's looking forward to it. It's a really nice time of year to get out there. And it is good for you. It is good for you to come.
Well, it's essentially the worst time of – it is the absolute worst time of year to get out there. But if the weather's okay during the day
– No.
I disagree. Know, obviously, because if it's cold, like animals don't go away.
Well, the bush is good because you can see through it in the winter, and that's why people go into the – and you can make fires. You make fires, and you can dress warmly, and you can go out on morning game drives and have a nice cup of coffee. It's nice. It's lovely. Nothing wrong with that.
Well, there is – yeah, I mean, the bush is great every single day of the year. I'd rather be there than anywhere that I currently reside. But, obviously the best time is probably end of winter when it's not so arse-paralyzingly cold.
Yeah.
Because then the animals move around a little freer. They're not so hidden away. Look, it also depends where you go. I'm going to Marikele for the first time. So that's basically north past Thaba Zimbi. And it's a bit more mountainous. So it's the Waterberg. There's the biggest vulture colony in the southern hemisphere, apparently, is there. There's lion, elephant, leopard, brown hyena.
Can we go
and
back?
I'm going to
can we go? Them. Can we go back to this discussion of Tom Jones? Because someone's brought up his fellow compatriot. Well, not compatriot, but Julio Iglesias, who was a colleague of his at the same time. And Julio, really, I think, even has a higher record of success with women than Tom Jones. And really, if we're going to praise any men in history for being real cocksmen, it has to be Julio Iglesias, Tom Jones, and probably Don King, you know, the boxing promoter for Mike Tyson. I think that guy,
really?
He pooned a lot, didn't he? I mean, with that wild hair and like he was managing Mike Tyson. I think he had his pick.
How the hell did Don King get into that podium?
Those
two are up there in their class.
All right, well, who would you put in from America? Because we've got a guy from Spain. I think that's where Julio's from. We've got a guy from Wales. Those are not expected places for people to be great cocksmen in history. You'd expect Italians to be in there. You'd expect Americans. I mean, who's
going to go straight for? Well, it's pretty obvious, Gareth. It's Mick Hucknall. That guy laid more cable than anybody.
The carrot tree.
Simply Red. All day.
And I love that the thought of coming home
that
to
literally
you.
Had,
even if
he
I know
literally
he
had
can
the sexiest
make...
songs of the 90s.
Oh, please. Yes. What is wrong with you? Have you lost your ears?
What?
Is that why you're wearing the headphones? You? Are you trying to that cover guy... your ears that were cut off?
Again, I'm flabbergasted by how ignorant you are sometimes. Mick Hucknall had the ability to basically serenade the 90s. A decade of people, he serenaded them with his beautiful, beautiful voice. So much so, he even called himself Simply Red, so he owned the worst thing about him. He got ahead of his scandal, and he just laid cable left, right, and center. Eventually, I mean, that guy, he had like a forearm. It was so worked out.
Can I show you what Mick Hucknall looks like now, just to depress you a little? You're talking about him like this.
I don't care, because his track record speaks for itself.
Whatever. Here he is, Mick Hucknall in all of his glory. All right, you ready for a shock this morning? Here he is. Look at this guy. Oh, Jesus.
I expected worse.
Worse? He had worse than that. He looks like he's been attacked by crows.
No, he looks fine. His skin is of decent elasticity. Oh, Gareth, you know what? It's not always about the looks. They wielded it like no one else.
I'll take your word for it.
I mean, look, it's not exactly like a metric for a great successful life, but Mick Hucknall punched above his weight. And I think if you put Mick Hucknall, Tom Jones, and Julio Iglesias on a podium of Coxman.
Wow. Yeah, they'd all do. Neil Diamond, someone says that. There's a good one. I think he also scored properly. Jim Morrison, another good one. Somebody says Mick Jagger. Gary says Mick Jagger.
Robert Palmer.
No, I don't know about Robert Palmer. Robert Plant, maybe. Kenny G was the Pied Piper of Poon in his day. That's what Gary says. Some interesting suggestions.
It's kind of funny because I was talking about this right now is hugely offensive and inappropriate.
Sure. Yeah,
but back in those, but like back in those days when Lamborghini made like the Countach, which was a stupid fucking car, but like that was a thing, right? So if there was a car called a Countach,
yeah,
and the people like Mick, like Tom Jones were like
a
taking
Countach.
Spare underwear off a stage and then lashing. That's how life used to be, and it feels like it's so disconnected from where we actually have come from. But we used to joke about this all the time.
Apparently, people used to call him Mick Fucknall. They used to actually say Mick Fucknall. That was his
exactly.
And here's a Lamborghini Countach for those who. What a terrible name for a car, really. I'm so glad you brought that up. It's always bothered me. That's the Lamborghini Countach. Isn't that the? I don't know. That looks familiar. Wasn't there a famous TV show with that in it? That's very 80s, hey? Wow. So 80s.
It was just like, it's just like there was no subtlety. This is where I'm going with this. There's no subtlety, right?
Yeah.
What does a sports car look like? It looks like a Countach. No, like a child designed that.
Yeah.
And it was so god awful to drive. So you see the back big rear wing spoiler? Just below that,
right?
And you think like, okay, well, that's just a giant blind spot on a car that goes so fast and basically is a death trap. And the back, those cars are horrible to drive.
Vyasin says, guys who drove it were cunts with a mustache. that's where the name comes from. That's so great. By the way, somebody says, oh my God, we forgot about Michael Bolton. Now that's a good point. Michael Bolton. Do you think... Although Michael Bolton used to sing those love songs, I don't think that generates the same kind of desire and fire in the loins that, you know, a Tom Jones or a I don't agree with Mick Hucknall, but a Julio Iglesias. I mean, Julio used to, you know, he could serenade, but he also had the swing. He had those moves. He had that hair, that magnificent mop of like Latin hair on his head. That guy, I mean, Julio Iglesias, I remember I went to a concert of his because I've always worshipped at the idol of Julio Iglesias when it comes to being a great coxman, right? I mean, this guy supposedly is meant to have bedded well over 5,000 women by his own estimation before he'd even turned 50. Now, if you just do the maths around that, that's more than one a day. And they're all different. He said they were all different. Dancing girls, women he met on tour, fans. He wasn't really discriminating. And he didn't have a type either. He was really a lover of all women. And Julio, I remember I met him at a concert because I was lucky enough to go backstage. And I was more excited to meet Julio than I was to meet Justin Bieber. And I remember I had a photograph. Sure. I had a photograph taken with him, which I must dig out at some point. And I said to him, you know, Julio, it's such a pleasure to see you doing what you do. And you really have this incredible personality. And is it true that you've slept with 5,000 women? And he looked at me and went, who knows? I'm not going to tell you. I thought, yeah, that's a guy. No, he doesn't even kiss and tell. Of course, the 5,000 number came from him originally, but now he's decided to be much more sanguine about it. I reckon if there are 500 kids, even 50 would be a small number for Julio of unclaimed children all over the world. He didn't even know Enrique was his son until the mother phoned him and said, hey, this kid, he's yours and he's got a singing career. And he was like, oh, okay, what do you want me to do? He was like, he wasn't interested. I told you that famous story about the Latin Music Awards, right?
Yeah. That is such a great story. How, yeah, it was very much like I'm the boss, bro.
I mean, I'll just repeat it very briefly for the people who haven't heard it. But Julio and Enrique were both up in the same category at the Latin Music Awards for Best Singer of the Year or what, Best Album Sales or whatever it was. And they were both in the same category. And everybody thought, oh, this is so sweet. You know, father and son, they're both going to be nominated in the same category. It doesn't matter who wins. Well, it did matter who won. Julio won, and he goes up on stage to collect his award. And he says, I want to thank you all. Well, obviously, this is in I think he was speaking Spanish, because he could speak French, Spanish, Portuguese. He speaks them all. So he gets up there. He goes, I want to thank you all for this award and for buying my album. And it is great to be the best. And he goes, and I want to say to my son. And they all go, oh, it's going to be such a lovely, tender thing he's going to say now. He goes, I want to say to my son, Enrique, you will never be as good as me ever. You will never be as good. And he holds up the trophy. He goes, I am the best. And he walks off. And then the cameras pan to Enrique, and he's sitting there going, oh, Jesus. That's great. I love that. That's the best thing that you could do. It makes me love them both, that they're in that messed up family. You know, so good.
There's another name that Viessen has brought up, Bless. Yes. Bridges.
Oh,
because no. He was basically the Afrikaans Julio Iglesias.
That's true, yeah. And I mean, a very much watered down and very much more PG-rated type of chap. But Bless Bridges, obviously, yeah. You know. And my God, did he have some terrible outfits. Bless Bridges, I reckon the fashion of Bless Bridges was probably among the world's worst sights that you could behold. And yet women, if they got a rose from Bless, a lot of these tunnies in small towns, I mean, Bless really.
Especially in Bloemfontein, a rose from Bless, God. In Bloemfontein.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you would be the pride of your family.
Oh, some of those women are still, they still got the rose. It's under one of those glass domes. And, you know, they only take it out at Christmas time and then they smell it to smell if they can still smell the traces of Bless. What a guy, huh?
But I reckon if you were to dig up Bless's wardrobe, you could sell it to pimps in America for like big money, because that's how he basically dressed.
Well, I'll show you a few pictures of Bless to refresh your memory. But you know, Viessen, you've brought up, you've stirred up some great memories here. I mean, Bless was an object of ridicule in our household, but for many households, he was the man. I mean, we never took Bless seriously. Yes. We'd laugh about him. There he is, Suis Nooit te Fuere. I don't know if that's a rugby jacket or if it's an American college kind of yellow and blue. And Bless has got a great haircut there. That was a very 1980s haircut. Like, the fringe just cut above the eyes by someone who had Parkinson's, clearly. But, you know, there it is. And here's a picture of earlier Bless before he had that great haircut. Again, in that same yellow shirt. I guarantee you it's the same. It was his favorite one.
Bless Bedi Seer.
Bless Bedi Seer, yeah. Isn't that great? It was probably taken in Margate.
But again, Bless is like, he's the perfect market, right? So your average Afrikaans person back in those days used to obviously be very Calvinistic, and the Domini was like the person to look up to. Bless was like the sexy Domini that you could, like, you know, do non-Jesus things with.
Right.
And so he had the authoritative figure,
yes,
with this bizarre suppressed sex appeal about him.
Yeah.
Just like McCucknall. No one, right. Nobody wanted to fuck a ginger straight up.
I still don't
boy,
think.
Could he sing.
I think you're way off the mark on McCucknall, but let's agree to disagree. Vyasin is bringing in the real clangers today. When he threw a rose at the Tunnies, they threw their slips. Mike, could you throw my slip at him? And they did. They did. They loved him. A lot of people saying what they did with those roses, they pressed them in their Bible, says Audrey. And I don't think that's an exaggeration. Parallel Parking reminding us that Freddie Mercury held fuck parties after every show. Yes, Freddie was the gay version of Tom Jones and Elvis. Many fuck parties.
He used to actually fuck for a sport. Because a lot of people would say, like,
well, he literally fucked himself to death. I mean, that's really what Freddie did.
He did.
Yeah.
He did. That was his thing. That was always his game. Hell of a game.
you were gonna say something before I interrupted you with he fucked himself to death.
Yeah, well, that was the thing. Like, I read this book about this one journalist spent time with him and on the road and all that kind of stuff. And he literally would. He was like duty bound. He would be in like a bad mood. He was tired after a huge show.
Hmm.
And he'd be like, oh, I'm gonna go fuck those guys now. And he would. And he would. He would like have a drink and he would just power through three or four guys and then be just exhausted. Guys, I do not make this up. But I will say one more thing about Mick Hucknall. Because of him, Ed Sheeran gets trim.
That's true. I mean, he did. He broke through where Ed Sheeran wouldn't have had a hope in hell if Mick Hucknall hadn't come before him. I do agree with that. He'd punched a hole through the wall and made it acceptable for gingers to be seen in public. And, you know, there was a lot of stuff there that really it was a breakthrough. And a lot of ginger people would still be. We'd throw stones at them in the street. I remember those days before Mick Hucknall. And you know, they'd be put in the stocks. You know those stocks, the medieval stocks, where your hands are through the two small holes and your head through them, and people would throw fruit? They'd go, ah, ginger, look, fire crotch, ha ha, Duracell battery. There were a whole lot of names for them. Horrible. I can't. Looking back, I'm ashamed that I took part in those vegetable throwing things. But you know, you got to admit your faults and move on. And I have grown as a person, and it's largely due to Mick Hucknall and the breakthroughs that he made for ginger people.
So, Gareth, I've unfortunately got to go at 7:30.
Yeah, I know. Very boring of you.
But I have to tell you a story quick about Paul Pops before he comes on, because he's our next guest here.
Yes,
I was asked to MC a golf day a few years ago. This was like, I don't know, let's just call it 4 years ago now.
Right.
And obviously, I'm not a comedian. So I told the organizers, you must really get a comedian. There's this guy in Paul Pups. He's really, really funny. Because Paul Pups and I used to work at the same advertising agency.
Right.
And he is, I still genuinely believe, he's probably the funniest comedian that I've ever had the privilege of seeing live in various settings. So I get this golf day, and the special guest is this deputy minister of fuck knows what. Obviously, she's 2 hours late.
Yeah.
And the crowd that was there, all they want to do is, like, you go to a golf day, you play golf, you have a shower, you have a drink, and you want your prize, and you go home. You don't want anything else. Mm-hmm. So there was about 150 people who just wanted the prize giving. And they're waiting and waiting and waiting. And I'm saying things from time to time because I'm the MC.
Yeah.
Everybody hates me at this stage.
Yeah, because you're wasting their time. And they're now, like, we want to get out of here.
And they keep asking me, like, where's the prize giving? So then I was like, okay, well, Paul Pops is here, so he's going to be the guy who they
when is the prize giving?
And basically, Paul Pops is going to be there with me because he's going to help me with the prize giving and an auction. So I was like, okay, cool. I've got him, like, under he's my trump card here. The crowd will be fine. So eventually, this fucking deputy minister arrives, says some stupid speech for 45 minutes about nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And now the crowd is really, really angry. So I'm still trying to just keep the peace. And Paul gets up there. He delivers the best 15-minute set, okay? But, like, banging. It's so good.
Yeah.
And I've got to finish the story. It is so good. Everyone has now forgotten about the fact that they hate their lives. They've forgotten about the fact they, like, had to wait 3 hours for all this kind of shit. And then he gets off stage. He says to me, "Yo, Ben, look, I've got to go to Nigeria, Bruce. I can't do this prize giving. I can't help you with the auction. I'm out of here." I was like, "You're fucking kidding me. These people are going to eat me alive." So then he's like, "Yeah, Bruce, sorry, but it's late. You know, you only booked me for this time." And I was like, "Yeah, fair enough. You know, this thing has gone on." So now he leaves, okay? These people are angry, slightly satiated with entertainment. I've now got to do a prize giving, but first I've got to do an auction. And the first, like, there's no one here with money. There's zero money. And the first item on the auction is a rhino tagging safari for 50K reserve. So I go, sir, opening bids, we've got a reserve of 50,000 Rand here. And it's like, everyone just starts laughing, like, what the fuck? Nobody wants that. I had to do 10 more items like that by myself. This entire crowd has just had Import Pops kill for 15 minutes. I'm now standing on the stage trying to auction items nobody wants.
They want
to
kill you.
I still had to get to prize giving. It was, I've never felt less significant as a human being, and it still makes me laugh to this day.
No, God. Yeah, but you are something else, my friend. Nice to see you, Impor. How are you?
Ah, I'm good. How are you guys, man?
Good. I feel like I haven't seen you in a very long time.
Yeah, Gareth, I haven't seen you in a very long time.
A lot of comedians didn't make it through lockdown, so I'm pleased that you are one of the ones that did.
I think lockdown kind of showed us who the real artists are, you know? Like, if you were still committed to
your craft. Don't say that about Dave Levinson.
Even during those times. Ah.
We love him too.
Dave makes beer now.
All right, listen, Ben's got to go.
Sorry, I've got to go.
Yeah, he's got.
Well, lovely to see you.
Work,
Ben, my brother. I'll see you at the next one, man.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Bye bye, Ben. All right, Paul.
Shit, I remember that.
I hear you doing.
What's happening?
All good, dude. I hear you're doing the roast of Kanimbao.
This is why I'm here, Gareth. Oh, I want to know, like, I'm here for advice, bro.
You know, from
one roast master to another.
So,
like, how do I prepare?
Well, I mean, listen, you have so much material with Kanimbao. You're gonna, you're swimming in it. That, first of all, I love her. I think she's fantastic. I know there are lots of people who say shit things about her, but I think she's a real character and she's added value to South Africa. And she's crazy and she's funny.
Yeah,
and she doesn't take herself seriously, which is exactly the kind of person you want at a roast. But these roasts are something else. So I've watched a lot of them. I watched a lot of the Comedy Central ones, the one of Joan Rivers, Donald Trump. I love these
Justin
things.
Justin Bieber.
The Justin Bieber ones,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, me too.
I love the ones where they bring in people like Snoop Dogg and
Shaq.
And Shaq and the late great, what was his name, the guy who shouted at everyone? Gilbert Gottfried!
Gilbert, that's the guy.
Oh my God, I love that guy.
He was hella funny.
You can't really screw
it
up.
Did you see the one roast?
You just have to be as rude as you can, and there's just no limit. Like, the more foul and disgusting you can be at a roast, the better, because people will just go, oh, well, it's a roast. You can get away with saying the most terrible things.
I know, but we live in the era of woke culture and sensitivity around certain communities. And yeah, I know. So it's, I don't think it's more like watch what you say, you might be canceled. I think it's one of those, you got to be careful in how you deliver what you're saying now.
Listen, this is your problem. I don't want to hear about this because I know you're one of the funniest people. And I know you'll figure out how to do this. And it's not just at the roast, but you've been doing lots of stand-up and you've been doing plenty of successful stuff in between, which we'll talk about in a second. But this is the real challenge for comedians these days, is to know how far to push it and what you have to say and not say. Like, I've always found it's okay if you joke about the blind people in sign language because they can't see it. It's okay if you make fun of the deaf people, but only in audio. They mustn't be able to lip read. So if you hold your – if you want to mock deaf people, the best way is to put your hand in front of your mouth like this, and then they can't lip read. And as long as there isn't someone in the corner of the screen going like this, then you're not going to get into trouble. But it's really like you've got to say and do special things at special times to be able to get away with pure humor.
Yeah.
And you know who's not funny?
Yeah.
The unfunniest people in the world right now are the woke people. It's like they are on a mission to be upset the whole time, and they've forgotten how to laugh. Like, if you want to see someone unhappy, just go to a feminist march or a – a pro-abortion thing or a Black Lives Matter thing. The woke people are all so unfunny. There's just no room for humor. You don't see people like, ha, 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 it's great to see you again. They're always like fucking angry. They've got these these sullen, grim expressions on their faces, and everything in the world is a problem. Man. And I'm like, we've had enough of those people. I think we're burnt out with that stuff. I really do.
We are, man. Like, also, when do we get to the point where we all have to agree? You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's what all these woke cultures and these movements are pushing. It's like we all have to agree that we all are like this, or we all believe in this. We don't all have to believe in the same thing. And also, I think what society is failing to do is to go, once we recognize something, so I'll take it back to playground primary school days.
Mm-hmm.
If I make fun of you, if the little boy makes fun of the little girl, mm-hmm. he likes you.
Yes.
He's looking for your attention. He recognizes you. He acknowledges you. So the fact that we make fun of you means that we see you. We recognize you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The people you have to avoid, the people you can't make fun of are usually people that you're either scared of or that you really don't like.
Yes, the government. The government. You can't make fun of the government.
Well,
in our country.
I don't know. These days, it's like open season. I mean, this whole pala-pala game reserve thing with Cyril, I mean, if that isn't material, I don't know what is. But tell me quickly, because I don't want to, like, skirt around the issues with you. You're always someone who I've admired for being as forthright and honest as you are. And despite the fact that you're in a game where there's massive competition, dude. I mean, comedians, you guys love each other. Some of you love each other more than others, but it's hugely competitive. And
yeah.
I love that comedy in South Africa has stayed the course, that there've been superstars like David Gao and Flismus and all those old guys, and then that there've been a generation that have come after them that have topped that and done even more. But you've really been at the center of this. You've watched some of the greatest guys, you've watched some of the guys way below you on the scale, and you've managed to like be as good as the best ones. And also stay in touch with the guys at the bottom. And like, how the hell does that work in comedy? In any other business, it's so competitive and ugly that you can't stay friends with the people who you do things with. I know that that's true for radio and television, probably true for, you know, like CEOs of major corporations. I'm sure they're always checking each other out, trying to figure out whether they're above or below them in the hierarchy.
Hey, man, I think, look, it's about staying neutral, man. You gotta stay neutral. Whatever job or industry you enter, there's always cliques and, you know, little squads and all of that stuff. And I remember Joe Parker told me when I was starting my career,
wow.
He was like, whatever you do, just avoid the drama of cliques. Avoid rolling with these guys.
Yeah.
And I don't work with these guys. And so So two pieces of advice I got. The one was from Joe Parker, and the other one was from Chris Forrest. He was like, in order to be successful in this country, I got to be able to place you anywhere. So you can't just put yourself in one category and go, I am this type of comedian.
Right.
I got to put you in front of any audience and you're supposed to make them laugh. So those two pieces of advice, I don't know if that's correct, English, led me to where I am now, because I'm versatile, but I don't also go, ah, this thing is above me or this thing is beneath me. I can literally go from doing 10,000 people at the Dome with Dave Gow just before the Dome closed down to literally doing 30 people at Kitcheners the next day.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So I remain neutral and I work with everybody. I work with everybody.
It's
and
a
I don't,
job. It's
really
a job, right?
It's a job, man.
A lot of people think entertainment is different because it looks like fun and the audience is having fun and people have paid to be there and it's their time off. But like when you're in the entertainment business, you're just looking at that paycheck. And I don't want to make it sound like it's an awful thing because we love what we do. I mean, you guys wouldn't be able to get on the stage.
Yeah.
If you didn't love being a comedian, you would have stopped it long ago. There are other ways to make a living.
Yep.
And most of the comics I know are smart enough to be able to do a lot of things. And there's a part of you that loves it. But the reality is, like when you get on that stage, you're working and you need to make it happen because otherwise your next paycheck might not come. You're only as good as your last show.
Exactly.
The pressure's huge.
Exactly.
Can you believe they turned the Dome into a car showroom?
Dude, I'm so upset. I'm so... What upset me more is I went to go look at a car the one time. They are so angry.
Oh, my God. I mean, with the number of great shows we've seen there. I mean, I was talking about concerts I've been to just earlier with Ben. I was like, I went to shows there. Now I'm going to walk around and there's someone trying to sell a fucking Taz from 2012. So depressing. I hate living in a country where the economy's not growing, you know?
Yeah. It's sad, man. Ugh. To watch something like The Dope. Because as a performer, I go, I'm edging closer. You know what I mean? I've seen Trevor at The Dome.
Right.
I've seen David Gao at The Dome. I performed with David at The Dome. And I was like, fuck, this is going to be me in the next 3-4 years.
Now you can't. Not if you don't move
next
the cars
three, four
out
years.
Of the way. It's a drive-in. It's going to be in poor pops at the drive-in.
I was about to say that. If they'll allow me, I'll do like a drive-in gig. But yeah, man, like we really lost a dope-ass venue. And not just for concerts, man. You know, like I'm a dad too, so.
Oh, well
I
done on that.
Used to do Disney on Ice.
Yes.
And all these Nickelodeon things there.
It was a thing.
And I've been to the other Disney on Ice. It does not compare to the Dome, man. We really lost out on a great
I mean, the acoustics in the Dome were absolutely shockingly shit all the time, especially if it was a music artist. They were, I mean, that place, you had to dampen sound left, right, and center. I remember
some people got it right, man.
Very few. I remember Kanye West. I had to introduce Kanye West on stage when he came out here, and I went backstage.
Oh shit! Yes.
Yeah. And remember that we all had to dress.
That was you. Yes.
We all had to dress in white, and it was such a good show, man. And that was Kanye at the height of his powers. Like Kanye was unstoppable at that stage. He hadn't yet started to have the creative juices tapped out of him by that Kim Kardashian. He was still flying high, you know, and
tapped out of.
Yeah, he did. He literally, I think. He gave his power to those Kardashians are vampires, dude. You must never, please promise me you'll never sleep with a Kardashian. They take black men's power away.
But they're all going back to white. So,
are they?
Yeah,
are they steadily like moving back to white
people?
Yeah,
they're steadily moving back.
They've sucked
to white.
The black man dry. Now they go to the white man. This is slavery 202. Hate this shit. Anyway, so Kanye, I remember going backstage because you know when they had a concert there that they'd build this whole thing with like you know drywalling, and then Kanye's suite was all decked out in white, and I went in and I decided, I know it's probably inappropriate that I'm even telling this story, but I decided I was going to take a pee in Kanye's private loo because it was 3 hours before the concert and it would be a long time. Obviously, I made sure I didn't leave a mess, you know, but I was like, yes, I took a piss in Kanye's private toilet because it was there. It was asking for it. And I was proud of myself. I was like, this is the greatest thing I've ever done. You know, people may say they saw Kanye West, but I took a piss in his toilet. I felt so proud of myself. Do you think that's childish?
No, that's not childish. Look, I have a moment like that I'm also very proud of.
Yes, tell us.
Angelina Jolie has smelled my fart.
Willingly or unwillingly?
Boom. Unwillingly. So I was traveling back from Zanzibar, right?
Yes.
I was coming back from Zanzibar with my baby mama. Mm-hmm. And we were in the Turkish lounge, right? So we were sitting in the Turkish lounge waiting for our flight back to SA. And it was like we had like a three or four hour layover. So I was really tired, so I fell asleep with my legs over her on the couch.
Oh wow!
And you know when you wake up and you feel one in the chamber and you're like, you know what? Because I'm already sleeping, I'm gonna be forgiven because it happened while I was asleep. So I just released it and just like you know carried on sleeping. So I just
and she was just sitting there, Angelina Jolie.
So all I felt was, oh my God, how could you do that? How could you do that? How could you fart in front of Angelina Jolie? So I was like, what? So then I wake up, I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, you just farted and Angelina was walking past. I'm like, there's no way Angelina Jolie just walked past. You're lying. So I'm like, this is bullshit, right? She goes, look there. There's a security guard there. He's there guarding her.
Dude.
Angelina just walked past with her daughter, and as they walked past us, you farted.
Was it a loud one? No way. Or was it just
what it was? Super loud. So it was super loud. It was one of those.
Dude, so that's great.
I shit you not, G. Like 5 minutes later, Angelina walks back. So she had walked to the bathroom with her daughter. 5 minutes later, she emerges from the bathroom. It's her and I think the daughter's name is Shiloh. The one
Shiloh, yeah.
Pitt.
Yeah.
Shiloh.
Shiloh Pitt. Pilo shit. Yeah.
and they, as they walk past, as they come, they look and they start laughing. Like they crack up. And they
that's
walk
the
past.
Farting guy. No. Boom. Paul, I think that's great. Angelina. I'm very proud of you. I think, you know, if I outlive you and I am invited to your funeral, and if I'm so lucky that they ask me to say a few words, I will remember this story, and I will make sure that on somewhere on the tombstone, on a small, I'm going to have them engraved just on the side where no one looks. I'm going to have them engraved. This guy farted right in Angelina Jolie's face. What a guy! Rest in peace. That's the thing. You great human being.
I'm going to hold you to that.
That's
if you don't do it, I'll haunt you.
No, I love that. That's power, dude. What a story. How many people can say they did that? It's so disrespectful. Did she try to adopt you, by the way? Because she does that when she's in Africa.
Nah, I had a mustache and a beard by then. So
too old, yeah. Too old. All right. That's a pity. Tracy says, a machine gun fart. Yes, he can be happy to be alive. The security guard was probably armed. Yeah, I mean, but you were pretending to be asleep. So it didn't really, you couldn't react.
I was, but I don't know what it is about that. You know, when you're laid out, it really does come out like a machine gun. So
well, also, I don't know about you, but when you have long haul flights, you have to hold in the farts for a long time. So when you eventually get somewhere, you got to, if there isn't a bathroom handy, you got to find a place to release that tension and pressure. And as you say, there's one in the chamber. I mean, sometimes on a long haul flight, like I refuse to fart in a plane because then everybody smells it and it's disgusting. And you're in a closed.
You gotta do it when everyone's asleep.
Well, no, even then I still feel bad because you know it's going to come out from under those blankets. It's not a good thing. And I remember I was on a plane, I think to London once, and there was a guy in like the middle, and I was on the aisle on the opposite side. And this guy was also, he's just ripping the whole time. I don't know what he'd eaten for breakfast or lunch that day, but he just was remorseless. And it's like a battleground. I was sitting in, I think it was a business class seat. There's no excuse for someone to be doing that in business class, really. You know, you'd think have a little bit of decorum. Go to the bathroom.
No. This is economy behavior.
Exactly.
This is definite.
Yeah.
I think someone bumped him up by mistake.
Definitely.
And he was too excited and he was ordering everything on the menu.
Yeah.
Because you see, people in business class don't, when it's your first time in business, you don't realize that there's a menu. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not two options. You have a whole menu.
You so just keep
this
ordering.
This guy was probably like, no fucking way. He ordered everything. And it started reacting.
Like the difference between you hosting Kanye and Bao, just to go back to that as the roast master and me doing it, is a lot of my material, like real comedians wrote. Like I'm not a comedian. I wrote a few things and I changed a few things, but you're writing your own stuff. So you said earlier you have to be careful about what to choose here because you have to know what all the other roasters are going to say because you can't repeat their jokes and you can't. If you've got a joke and then they've written something similar, you have to take yours out because you get like second pick. They have to because a lot of them are not professional comics either. There will be some comics, but it's going to be you have to also guide the thing. So it's tough. Being the roast master is probably the hardest job on the stage.
It is. It is because you kind of, as you said, you have to guide the whole process.
Mm-hmm.
You have to take second pick on the best gags and the best jokes. And then you also got to facilitate it in such a way that you keep the momentum and the energy up for the show.
Right
up until Kanye comes on, right?
Yeah.
And you got to be ready for whatever happens. So you'll get panelists that will kill, but you also going to get those that will die, you know. Yeah. some people Jeez, might
that's
just,
hard.
There are those that just
what is
you also got to be ready for that.
What is frustrating about that, and I remember when we recorded the one for I was the roast master of Some Easy. So they make you arrive there early, and then you spend hours and hours waiting for them to like get the stage right. The audience has got to come in. It takes a long, long time. And I remember I was just not interested anymore. By the time the cameras started rolling at 9 o'clock, I was working on like the fumes. I had finished. Nothing left. I'd done a radio show that morning. I was annoyed. I was in the stupid dressing room, which people don't know how boring these dressing rooms are. They always put shit like apples and bananas in a bowl in there, and you have to look at yourself in the mirror the whole time because there's nothing to do in that goddamn room except be on your phone. And I remember by the time they eventually started recording it, I was not in the mood, and that's not good because you have to, as you rightly say, bring up the energy for everyone else. And luckily, I don't know where it came from, but it's still not my finest moment when I think of that. And people still say to me, because they keep repeating this, they don't have enough material on these channels. So they keep repeating like old stuff. And then someone will send me a message on social media about it. Oh, I love the Some Easy roast, or hey, 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 you are so funny, or whatever. And I'm like, not really. It's not my proudest thing. I know you'll do a way better job than me, dude, with your eyes closed.
You'll do well, man. I think what people don't understand, and it's actually quite dope that you touched on it, people don't understand how much this type of stuff takes out of you, right?
It's so horrible.
So something like the roast, you anticipate it for so long, mm-hmm. right? And if you're like me and you have like a little bit of anxiety on the side,
sure,
you're so anxious, like the week before, 2 days before. The day before, you wake up on the day, you're like, oh, fuck, it's the day of.
What do you do for the anxiety, again, by the way? Do you take anything? Do you drink? Do you, like, calm yourself down? Do you meditate? Is there a thing you do? Because you have to have some tool for dealing with anxiety, and I didn't know you even had that. So what is it?
So not anymore. So I don't take anything anymore. I don't have a coping mechanism anymore.
Okay.
I've always paced backstage before a show. That's why sitting in a dressing room for like 6 hours would freak me the fuck out, right? But what I do is I find exercise kind of helps.
Yeah.
But just before I go on stage, right, I pray. And and it wasn't until I think recently, a couple of months ago, I really started meditating properly and started like getting to understand meditation and started doing it properly. Until then, I realized that me praying before I go on stage is a form of meditation.
Absolutely.
It's me calming myself. It's me getting myself ready. Because I found shows where I didn't pray before I go on stage, I'd normally have a shitty show. But if it's shows where I would take the time, even if it's like a quick 5 minutes, just to pray, I don't know, something happens. And when I go out there, I kill. So I think that's the one thing that I do to just,
do you know,
just
who,
calm my nerves.
Do you know who else is on? You obviously know who else is on the lineup. I mean, who else is going to be taking the piss out of Kanye Bao?
Celeste Ntuli.
I love her. I love Celeste.
She's a beast, bro.
Man,
she's
that woman's great.
She's a beast.
Yeah.
She's a beast. Then we've got Sel Beyonce. Sel Beyonce. She's a... She's a they.
Oh, wow. You better get that right before the roast. You're going to be in such shit if you mess that up.
This is why I said, man.
But, all right. I don't know who this is. So their name is Sel.
A radio host.
Sel Beyonce. So, Beyonce. I mean, it's not even like the surname is the name of an existing star, and this is not a singer we're talking about.
Yes, this is a radio show host on Ukozi FM.
God help us. All right, who else?
Yeah, God help us. And then...
well, that's going to be material. I mean, listen.
God help me.
You're going to be in shit. I can tell immediately they're going to be canceling you after your first joke. And here is Sel Beyonce. And you're going to be fired immediately. Who else? Let's move on before we get into more trouble.
I love the fact that when I said that, everything I went through when I found out Sal Beyonce is on there, I saw it happen in your face. And I was like, yeah.
I got to watch this. Listen, I was not going to watch, but now, just to see you introduce Sal Beyonce, I'm fucking in. I am in.
And then we've got the lady, is it Ravi? Ravi, she's on Carte Blanche. Well, she was on Carte Blanche.
Oh, Devi. Devi Sankari Govinda. I love her.
Yes.
I don't know how funny she'll
love Devi, bro.
I don't know how funny she'll be with lines, but I'll tell you, in real life, she's actually a hilarious person, and she's got a great sense of humor and does not mind being taken the piss out of as well. So you can have a go at Devi. Oh, she's tough as nails, man. She's tough.
Dude, you guys had that other lady who was also a news anchor, and she fucking killed. Remember there was the Indian lady who was in news.
Name.
She did well. She did. And we were all like, who the hell is this? Yeah. Why would she be on the panel?
You know, sometimes those people who are not comics, sometimes they really flame out and they're a disgrace and they're embarrassing and they make the rest of us, they remind us how brilliant comics are. But occasionally, very rarely, but occasionally you get someone who's just like a natural. And if they've got the right material, that's essential. But if they've got the right material and their timing is good and, you know, they've got a vibe with the audience and they're self-assured. I mean, those people can sometimes do the most incredible job. It's fun to watch. That is something that makes the roast a unique thing.
Yeah. Ach, yeah. So
Joanne Strauss. It was someone else. She used to be on 702. She used to do the afternoon show there. I cannot remember her name. But then that's true for most of people on 702. Can't remember their names. Right? And like, who's still listening to that chat? I mean, is there anyone still listening? I reckon when they go in and they start the morning show or any other show on that channel, they switch on the lights, they switch on the machines, and they have to first test that anyone's listening. This morning, I forgot to switch for the first 2 seconds or maybe 2 minutes of the show, I forgot to switch my microphone on. And I was like getting messages from people on the comments like, yeah, your microphone's off, you moron. And like people sending me WhatsApps and fucking social media. Like, what's wrong with you, you idiot? You've been doing this for Joanne Joseph? No, it wasn't Joanne Joseph. Was it? Yeah, Joanne Joseph.
No, it was.
There we go. You had to think about that for a bit. But yeah, I was thinking like no one's going to do that at 7:02. If someone forgets to switch on the mic, there's no one paying attention to remind them. They're going to be like they've done a whole 3-hour show and nobody's told them that their mic was off. Shame.
Yeah.
It's tough.
But you're right.
Dude.
As you said that, I was trying to think about who I know on 7:02. And I have an interview on 7:02 later.
Oh, please tell me who it is once you figure it out. Just message me with whoever it is. It'd be interesting. Maybe I'll listen. I'll take a listen to that. So, dude, are you doing gigs every week? Are you back at full capacity? Because I know that, you know, jokingly said, and I didn't mean to be insensitive because I actually really like comics. A lot of people had a fucking terrible 2 years and everything in entertainment was shut down. But are you back at full capacity now?
Oh, I never left. I have what we call pandemic guilt. I have pandemic guilt because I did fucking well in the pandemic.
I'm so pleased.
I did so fucking well, Garrett.
That's great.
Creepers. I was killing it in the pandemic. Those are two amazing years for me. I bought two cars during the pandemic.
Wow.
It was hectic, man.
Weren't you doing did a regular appearance at the Enyo Benny Tavern, didn't you, for a little while before they
So you know what happened, bro? Like, so the world pivoted to digital, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of people didn't figure out how to do digital. I did after dying like 4 or 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
It was so bad. I was just like, fuck this. I was at the point where I wanted to quit. I was like, I don't want to ever do this again.
Yeah.
But then I figured out how to do digital. And I figured out how to do it well. I figured out how to start playing with.
I watched something that you did. You were really quick to adapt.
Yeah, I adapted very quickly. And then I just became super busy because I would do digital But then there were also the hybrid things that were still happening. And I was shooting a lot of stuff. And then as things slowly started opening up, there were still a lot of digital things to be done. So I was just like, I found myself at times doing a digital gig while I was at a gig. Or I'd be on set shooting something and I'd ask them to reschedule lunch so that on my lunch hour, I could literally sit with my MacBook and just do a
gig. Did you make so much money that other comics were hitting you up for cash during the lockdown?
Yeah, yeah. And
did you lend any of the money?
Just like,
do you want to name names?
No, I'd never do that to Robbie Collins and Tabiso Mhlongo and Tsitsi Junior and David Gar and Dave Levinson and Chris Forrest and
Mojack
Lehoko and Lazola Gola. I'd never do that to my friends, man. You know what I mean? Those are my dudes.
Oh, my bro. Listen, I can't believe it's already 8 o'clock because it feels like 5 minutes I've spent with you. Paul, please come again. And dude, it's so good to see you. Good luck with the roast. Yeah, I know you're going to absolutely destroy it. And you can follow Paul on all his socials. We'll make sure we post the links. Pay attention because if you don't pay attention to this guy, you get left behind. It's always good to see you, dude.
Always good to see you, man.
Thanks so much. All right. Have a great weekend. All right, everybody. Have a good weekend. We will see you on Monday. If you're wondering where George Meany is, he's not joining us this morning, which is why I got extra time to talk to him, Paul. But we will see you on Monday, 6 a.m. bright and early. Ah, Simpiu M. Tetwa. They're running things in the studio. Pops.
He's got the fees must fall, dude.
yeah, but she is like, that's her thing. All right, everybody. Cheers. Bye-bye. CliffCentral.com.